He plays. Our people stood staring. Titus is undead and their blood dinner stood. The smell of uncertainty coiled in the air, a descent of scent beneath the melody of fanghead blood. And the stillness ended. Moving like fish in a school, Titus's people rushed in, gathering the head and body. Brandon stepped from the group of Honorios who were acting as judges along with Sabina. Brandon seemed to be the spokesperson. He said, "Results of this duel are acceptable to the Honorios." Sabina said, "Next duel, in 15 minutes. I tried to catch Bruiser's eye, but he didn't turn my way, bending his head to the B-twins as the three talked. Some vamps left the fighting area to walk under the stars on the beaches. Ed came to me limping. "You scared me," I said.
"My heart is both saddened and full of joy," he said. "Saddened that I frightened my mistress. Full of joy that my mistress cares."
"Uh-huh. Keep it up, Eddie boy." I started to turn and caught Titus's eyes on me. In them I could read multiple emotions. Avarice, curiosity, hatred, a cold fury that let me know how much he had liked the blonde angel Simon, and how much he blamed me for the vamp's death, and the fact that he had seen me leap what amounted to 4 stories in 2 bounds. "Good," I put my thoughts into my eyes. "Chew on that, your magisterial ass. Stuff you saw on the stolen video? It's all true, and I'm coming for you." I gave him a toothy grin and put all that into my body language as I strolled into the darkness. The shadow of a camera wolf was beside mine, and I knew my leaps were now part of the permanent record of the Sangre Duello. So was the death of Simon, and the vision of Titus watching me. The camera wolf fell away, finding something better to shoot than me in the dark. Once I was beyond the house and prying ears, I had myself a silent bout of anger pounding the sand. My hand, the one that had healed around the magical thingy when it was created, was furiously squeezing the globs I hammered it on the earth. For long seconds, I couldn't force myself to stop or to let go. It hurt my hand. I got sand in my eyes. But I felt better after my temper tantrum. On both floors, the next rounds began. Leo's side was winning. Ro Moore chose wrestling as her weapon and defeated her opponent according to standard wrestling rules. She took on 2 vamps at one time and killed them both on the sand. There was enough blood and gore to make the wolves dance in glee. The pay-per-view numbers had started smaller than anticipated, but they had now outpaced expectations and were growing rapidly. Brenda Rezk took on a Vespianu security guy. And the finish was 2 simultaneous cuts. The cut to her arm was a surface wound, while the other guy was carted away needing major vamp blood to heal. She lost on time, but won on wounds delivered. After that, things went sour. Marianne, Edmund's lover and blood servant, died at the hand of a woman named Cupid, her head rolling across the sandy rings. Edmund went still as death, except for the human tears that spilled down his face as she fell. His tears tore into me like claws into raw meat. The bout bell rang upstairs. I hugged him and left him to his grief.
"Results of this duel are acceptable to the Honorios," Brandon said behind me. And for the first time since I met the Honorio twins, I wanted to slap them. Slap all 3 of them.
In the next match, which was supposed to end with first blood, Titus's swordswoman cheated at Ungard, and Xi took a hidden steel blade into his belly and out his back, followed by a Z-shaped move that carved his innards into Zorro-inspired spaghetti. Anzus were lethally allergic to steel and couldn't heal themselves on Earth. Xi didn't die, but only because his organs were not human-sided, but Anzu-sided, and because Leo fed him from his own wrist. My enforcer was out for the night, likely for the rest of the Sangre Duello. The cheater won. Cheating was smiled upon in the Sangre Duello. Edmund took the ring facing off with two blades to first blood against a vamp who called himself Jita Lane, which was supposed to be a Somali for the verb to whip. Jita Lane had little to no dossier beyond his presumed age. My primo stood there in blue armor facing a 600-year-old vamp. Something in Jita Lane's stance caused my heart to flutter. It may have stopped. I had a very, very bad feeling. The bell sounded, the tone a clear, pure note of death. Jita Lane slithered, swords so fast they sang on the air. In half a second, Ed took two cuts. Blood flew. His opponent stepped back, honoring first blood. But my primo's left hand was nearly severed at the wrist, bloody, splintered, and cut bone exposed, his hand hanging by tendons. His right thumb was equally nearly amputated. Bile boiled into my throat at the sight. Someone again held me back as Leo's clan members rushed to provide assistance and clean up the blood spatter. Two blood servants bundled my primo into sheets and carried him down the stairs. I followed the scent, taste of his blood, and pain heavy on the air. My feet felt strange on the stairs, as if they didn't quite touch down, as if I might slide off and into another dimension. And I still held the glob. It was so cold. It was like clutching an ice cube. Behind me, I heard Brandon say, "Results of this duel are acceptable to the Honorios." I managed not to whirl back and cold cock him. In Edmund's shared cubicle in the center rooms, the vamps and humans placed my primo on a bed. My primo. Someone I should have protected. A woman said, "I have him. Dale, get the bottle. Right here, Mama. I'm ready." A half-familiar smell hit the air, blood and chemicals. I blinked to focus on Daisy Mooney, kneeling on the mattress beside Edmund, his right hand in her left. The heir of Clan Shattuck said, "Ed, honey, we're gonna coat your thumb with the blood remedy. This will hurt. They say it feels as if one is being immolated."
"I wouldn't know. You can tell me."
Daisy upended a small glass vial over Ed's severed thumb, and a thick, syrupy drop formed on the end of its rubber spout. I recognized the scent of the blood remedy. Leo's Texas biomedical lab indeed had reverse-engineered the revenant potion, left by the vamp funeral director when the Caruso blood family skipped town to back the EVs. But instead of creating it to make revenants, Leo had made his version for healing. The MOC was a dangerous creature, but sometimes he was also a pretty cool dude. I still wondered at the oddity of the Carusos leaving their bottle, and at the letter Leo had received claiming they had betrayed him only to save Lori Caruso's daughter. It could be insurance, a bid for protection should Titus lose. Caruso's playing the long game, maybe. Daisy dribbled the drop on Ed's severed thumb and pressed the thumb back in place. Ed screamed. He continued screaming as Daisy and six other vamps held him down so Dell could apply the blood mixture to the ends of his amputated hand. Dell's blonde head bent over my primo, her fighting leathers the color of her eyes. Ed screamed, his ululation so high-pitched that I went deaf and had to step from the room. Yeah, that was the reason. Not my own cowardice at seeing a man I cared for injured and in agony for trying to protect me. Shiloh walked down the stairs toward me, followed by a line of men and women. "Leo wants you to follow this one," she said, her long, straight red hair swinging. Except for hers, I had never seen straight red hair. Red hair was always curly. Stupid thoughts. Stupid duel. I hated this. These mind games and blood and death. Why do I need to follow you? I asked, my lips feeling numb. Edmund was being tortured. I could hear his screams through the soundproofed door. I placed a hand on the door as if I could ease his pain through the steel. Your two best fighters are down and out, Shiloh said. Count is slated to fight seconds after this bout, so he can't fight this one.
She's trying to tell you that I accepted my own duel, Eli said.
He descended the last four steps and stopped beside me. The acid in my stomach boiled. Why? I whispered. Shiloh said, Challenger is Lucrezia Borgia. Eli Younger chose weapons.
I picked matching German Sig Sauer P320s,
Eli said.
Naturellement. I contested such barbarism,
the female vamp behind him said.
However, the priestess has denied my disputation.
I recognized the woman. Hers was one of the histories I'd studied in preparation for the EV's visit. A VIV, very important vamp. She shouldn't have been on the roster until later tonight at the worst, tomorrow at best. And G or Ed should have been fighting her, not Eli. I followed Shiloh down the stairs, not sure why we were going down and not up. My brain was wrapped in cotton. Ed was screaming. I could still hear him. Shiloh said, Lucrezia Borgia chose death. My boots halted on the stairs. I came to a stop, my mind flashing with useless information. Lucrezia was the illegitimate child of a pope and his mistress in the early 1500s and had become an assassin for Titus. She was a master at hundreds of weapons. Her dossier said that she practiced all night every night with blades and firearms. I was so cold at the thought that my head started buzzing and nausea boiled in my gut. The P-320 was a brand new modular weapon, a serialized gun. It could be modified to shoot 9mm loads, altered quickly to fire .357 SIG, 40 S&W, or even 45 ACP, automatic Colt pistol. No matter how good vamps were, there were always weapons old vamps hadn't fired, because they figured the ones they were most familiar with were the best. This was sometimes true, sometimes not. There was a chance, a small chance. Lucrezia had never fired this modular and wouldn't have the muscle memory to make her a perfect shot. I started my feet moving again, down, down to the death rings. Eli was standing on the front porch, moonlight brightening the world around him, making his black leather seem darker, as if he himself were a pathway into the underworld. I set my eyes on him, but he didn't look back, though he surely had to feel the weight of my gaze. He led the way down the steps. We were halfway down to the beach when Shiloh said to me, "The duel is at 40 paces, 20 each, approximately 100 feet, depending on stride. Since it's with firearms, it's all very methodical and according to protocol covered in codicils other than the Sangre Duello." I walked away from Shiloh across the sand, following Eli. He was breathing slowly. The pulse in his neck was equally slow. Zen, warrior face on. But he smelled, strangely, of excitement and joy. On the beach, the gulf's waves curled on the sand. Lightning split and danced in the distant sky. A storm so far away it looked as if the clouds and water were one. With beast sight, I studied the building cloud. Not magic lightning, just one of the ubiquitous storms on gulf water. Thunder rolled in with the waves long and low. The tide was high, making the beach a narrow strip. The wind was cold, and I shivered as it needled its way through my clothes. Eli bent to his second. That second couldn't be me, so Tex had accepted that position, and they spoke in voices I might have heard had I tried. Brute trotted across the sand to me and stuck his nose into my crotch. I batted him away. Stop that. He chuffed with laughter and sat close beside me. A moment later, he leaned his entire body against me from calf to hip, in what was clearly an attempt to comfort me. I could feel his panting breaths and his body heat through the leather uniform, and I realized how cold I was, probably shocky, because I couldn't help my people, and Eli was facing a warrior who had been fighting and shooting for centuries. I scratched Brute's head between his ears. Dang werewolf. He chuffed in agreement. Lucrezia was a pretty woman, with golden hair and blue-green eyes. She looked way younger than her stated age when turned, and I figured she had been changed a decade or so prior to her reported death, and her human self had been replaced with another woman. It was likely that replacement human was the woman recorded by history as having gained a huge amount of weight while supposedly grieving a dead husband and died young. Brute's head on my leg, I stood to the side and watched the combatants standing back to back. Snatches of instructions came to me in the wind. Eli and Lucrezia shook hands. Tex shook Lucrezia's second's hand, a human who had been fed on and had been sipping vamp blood for over 200 years. She was currently known as Whimsical Lou. Stupid name, but that was what the second called herself. Whimsical Lou, no last name. The seconds walked out to the positions where their firsts would likely stand and waited. Eli and Lucrezia stood back to back. The moonlight was a long streak across the choppy water, ahead of the storm. I heard a distant bell tone, and Eli and Lucrezia strode away from one another, Shiloh counting off the paces. On his last pace, Eli stepped quickly to the side. They turned and fired. But Eli was a foot to the side of where he should have been. Lucrezia's shot missed. Eli's hit her chest, just left of mid-center. She screamed in that sound of a vamp dying, though it was all drama queen. They had used standard ammo so the shot would fly true over the distance. She'd live. I laughed in relief, the sound billowing on the wind and out to sea. The smell of Lucrezia's blood sharp on the air. Eli had survived and won his bout, except that this was supposed to be to the death. He strode toward the downed vamp, and then time broke in slow motion. Time in battle is subjective, thick and viscous like taffy, an avalanche of images. Brute snarled. Beast leaped into the forefront of my brain, screaming challenge. In agonizing, protracted fragments of time, Lucrezia's second, Whimsical Lou, took two long steps into the dueling space, drew a long-barreled handgun, aimed, fired. The round hit Eli, mid-center. I could see it as it pierced his leather jacket. Beast screamed. Iwe leaped, raced down the sand, grew claws with my right hand, drew a blade with my left. The blade took the whimsical second through the right eye. The claws tore out her throat, all while in midair. She fell, rolled into the low waves, dark in the moonlight. A shot rang in the night, taking Lou in the chest. Tex, holding his six-shooter, fired again. Lucrezia fell. Tex stood over her, firing until the chamber was empty. Time snapped back. I rose from the landing crouch and sprinted to Eli, my combat boots crunching, throwing sand. Eli wasn't moving, lying on the shore, face down, head to the side. One arm twisted, outstretched in the slight surf, clear, salty bubbles pooling in his palm. My body was so cold it felt like a shard of iceberg. Tears filled my lids and clung there as if holding onto the rims of frozen cliff faces. I heard Shiloh ask calmly, "Have the deceased signed papers to be turned?" Bruiser's voice, sounding cool and distant, said, "Lucrezia is true dead, as is Whimsical Lou. The judges await status of Eli Younger." I knelt, rolled Eli over, placed a hand on his chest, and
felt a heartbeat. Didn't smell blood. I leaned in and sniffed, a long cat scree of sound pulling in air over my tongue. No blood. I pressed down on his chest, feeling the kind of armor Uncle Sam's men wore to war. Not just armor against blades, but against bullets. My tears spilled onto his face. I put my mouth at his ear and hissed, "If you're not dead, I may kill you for scaring me to death." "Sorry, babe." The words were a breath against my cheek, his lips scarcely moving. Just remembering how to breathe. I thought I might pass out from the relief that rammed through me. I shouted to the wind, "He's alive! Eli will not be turned." "Never wanted to drink blood," he gasped. "Are you hit?" I whispered back, asking if the round penetrated the armor. "Not," he whispered, the sound creaking with tight breath. I dropped my head to his, forehead to forehead. "But I'm going to kill Lucrezia Borgia."
"My mistress, Lucrezia Borgia is true dead," Tex said. "I took her conniving snake belly lowlife and her head."
"Good. I think she broke my rib," Eli said. "Sucker hurts."
I rolled Eli up into my arms. He grunted with pain, tightening up to protect the hurt rib.
"Babe,"
he wheezed.
"Next time, we've got a backboard."
"Oh, right. Sorry." I tucked his head against my shoulder and carried him up the stairs and into the house as if he was the most valuable thing in the universe.
Results of this duel are acceptable to the Honorios.
Chapter 18. Rainbow-colored baby bunnies and lollipops. The body of Lucrezia Borgia disappeared, probably back to the EV ship in deeper water. I spared a single thought that the Carusos might be aboard, forced into making the dead into revenants. But I just flat out didn't care. Instead, after I deposited Eli in the vamp's sleeping lair for a hit of Texas healing vamp blood, Sabina called me to the third floor. She stood in the center of the middle fighting octagonal and said,
"The challenges to Jane Yellow Rock have been met. All but one. This latest is for dominance over Clan Yellow Rock, and that by Dominique Kesser, formerly of Clan Arsenault, now secundo heir of Clan de Citron."
Beast growled. I snarled. Dominance duel. Holy crap. Time again did that battlefield slowdown, where everything happened in overlays of understanding and images. Dominique moved up the stairs and through the scions and blood servants, like a snake through tall grass. I put my hands in my pockets, slouched as if irked by inconsequentials, and looked the challenger over with jaded eyes. Dominique stank of lemons and fresh human blood. She was dressed in fighting leathers, dyed the color of her blonde hair, which she wore long and down. On her neck was a necklace of small gray moonstones, the same shade as her pale eyes. On the necklace was a pendant, a ruby wired with gold. I pulled on Beast's sight and saw the tracery of old, faint magics in the moonstones, empty of power now, but once likely used by a moon witch. The ruby, however, was something more powerful. Intense red motes flashed through it, motes that seemed to call to my own magics. I felt a pull in my midsection, as if I'd swallowed a bag of iron filings, as if a magnet drew on them. Pain slithered through my belly. I almost stepped back. I'd seen a ruby like that before. In fact, I had a ruby like it in my box of magical trinkets. And if there were two of them, what did they do? What could they do together? Ah, Dominique might know or guess that I had the other ruby. I had been challenged by Dominique Kisser. Dominique was a traitor,
She had waited to try for my head until after I had something she wanted. My clan and my people. My ruby. Had she been looking for it in Leo's office when she beat holes in the wall? And Adriana, her lover whom I had finally killed true dead, had been after Lubra Luck, the crown of the Dark Queen, when I took her head. Dominique wanted the most important objet de magie. Dominique had visions of grandeur. She had seen me fight, knew what I could do. She was good with two swords, even better with one. Better than me by far with any weapon. My mind circled back to Adan. Adan had been playing with time. The last moments of the battle that had freed Adan flashed through my memory. There was something there. Something important about using magic. Time slapped back to full speed. As the last member of the inner circle of Clan Yellow Rock able to wield a weapon, I accept for my master, Cowan said. He was standing behind me and I had no idea when he had appeared there. Weapons, he said. One sword, one battle axe, no armor. I will fight the Blood Master of Clan Yellow Rock. And no other, Dominique said. Her tone and her stance were insolent, and there was a trace of something in her light eyes that said she expected to win by cheating. First blood. Challenge accepted. One blade each, no longer than 14 inches. Claws and talons, I said. And then I smiled, letting my lips expose my teeth slowly in threat. Beast peered through my eyes. Jewelry is acceptable. Dominique blinked, realizing that I knew about the ruby. Knew she was going to cheat with magic against the most important rule in Sangre Duello and dominance fights. And that I didn't care. Here and now, Dominique said. I gave her a jut of my head and drew on beast energies. Everyone cleared the floor space and I moved to Eli. My partner in second was holding a Desert Eagle 50 caliber handgun at his thigh. He holstered it with a tiny click. You sure about this? He asked. Yeah, I'm sure. Because I had remembered the thing I had learned when Adan was in a cage, harnessing the time-walking magic of an arc-en-ciel. Stealing her magic. If I could feel the pull of Dominique's ruby, then I could use its power. And the motes of power in my middle said I could take all its magic for myself. I was becoming the Dark Queen in truth. What blade? He asked. The Moogle blade. Eli paused in helping me prepare for this fight. Why? Because the myth that came with it said that the blade has magic in it. It will deflect or lessen the mortal blow of an enemy. Whoever owns the blade can't die in battle. Eli shook his head, not happy with my answer. He preferred weapons that blew things up. I glanced around, noting where everyone was. Roe Moore was standing in front of a window that had once been a fire escape. Her gaze went from the fighting rings to the roof below and back, watching for anyone who might want to interrupt the proceedings with a hand grenade. I hadn't even considered that possibility. I was getting lax. Good thing I had trained smart people. I nodded to her. She nodded toward the windows at the back of the room with a faint smile. I looked there and saw Brenda Resk guarding that possible access. Yeah, smart people. Go me. I was ready. Beast, I thought. I need some claws. Just claws.
Jane needs killing teeth and power of half-form.
Not this time. Just claws. My fingers went knobby and hard as I gasped. The tips burned as if I'd stuck them into red-hot coals. Beast's retractable claws reformed at the tips. 10 killing claws. My fingertips oozed blood and I licked it off. Ouch, I thought at her. Deep inside, she said,
5 and 5 killing claws.
She sniffed at me and turned away. I stepped into the fighting ring and closed my eyes, breathing in Eli's Zen and my skinwalker meditation, letting my body relax and tense all at once, just as if I was going to shift into a difficult form. The bell sounded. My eyes opened and Dominique attacked, shouting,
"Ralentissez!"
A thin line of power shot from her necklace, a slowdown spell hidden in the ruby and released with a word. Time slowed down. The five-pointed energies in my middle reached out and wrapped around the line of magic, altered it, pulled it in, incorporated the word and the energies into my own. A silvered vamp killer stabbed at me. I bent around the blade in a dance move, stepped into her reach, clawed her face with one hand, slicing deeply into her waist with the Moogle blade. I yanked on the blade, cutting into her. Dominique screamed, that piercing vamp ululation that said she was dying. Her eyes flashed scarlet, her fangs snicked down. She ripped away, tearing my blade from her flesh. She disappeared with a tiny pop of sound. Toward the window, where Brenda Redsk stood guard. Dominique landed, ripped at Brenda, tearing out her throat, dived through the window, landed on the roof below with a loud, hollow thump. Brenda fell, her blood a pulsing spray, her head at an awful angle. Titus's second caught Brenda's body, eased her to the floor. It was too late. There was not enough left to save. Cown leaped after the traitor. Paused in the window, his gaze tracked Dominique, his body and tattoos catching the lights in strange blue and black shadows on pale skin. He watched her run, his head following her progress around and toward the water at the front of the house. A moment later, he tilted his head and said to me, "In spite of the angel of death, all is well, my master." No one else had moved. Sabina said, "Magic was used by Dominique Kisser. Her penalty is true death." I stilled. I had used magic, too. Sabina went on. "Magic was used by Jane Yellowrock, though only in self-defense, and after Dominique's attack. The Outclan priestess rules this an acceptable use. No penalty to Yellowrock." Part of me wilted, but I didn't let it show on the outside. Softly, Grey Gois said to someone, "Bring Dominique back to me. Her true death is mine." I thought, if he hadn't brought her back when her throat was ripped out, we wouldn't be in this mess now. Gregoire and Leo had been hunting for the clan who had allied with her. They had taken a gamble that Brenda had paid for with her life. Bodies moved, vamps and humans departed. I watched as Brenda was carted down the stairs, dead. Killed for spite, not as part of the duello. Killed for not a damn thing. The cleanup crew started on the blood. People went in search of dinner and beer. I dropped to a bench and mourned the blood servant. We'd made a mistake. We needed more toilets. Even vamps had to pee, it seemed, and either eating corn dogs and drinking beer made them pee more, or they had trouble getting out of their fighting leathers, or they were just being pains in the backside. The lines to the bathrooms were 10 people long, 90% of them female. Most males were outside finding a likely tree. I chose to do my business outside, at which point I discovered how freaking hard it was to get out of the new leathers. The uniform was comfortable in every way, except for a female needing to answer the call of nature. When I finally got my business done, my leathers in place and my weapons holstered, sheathed, and hidden, I was frustrated and ready to hit something. I headed to the circle of hedge of thorns, my BFF and the murderer, Dominique. Molly had stretched out on a lounge chair under a blanket or three to keep out of the cold wind, her baby bump hidden by the swathing. Dominique was standing on the sand, in an inverted hedge of thorns, fists bunched, frothing at the mouth, screaming obscenities, I assumed from her expression, though I couldn't hear her. "How'd you turn down the volume?" I asked. Molly laughed, a sad but ladylike laugh I'd never master. Lakish's family uses it on the farm to keep the sound of tractors and farm equipment to a minimum. It's a noise version of a confuto working, and I'm totally stealing it and setting it on myself so I can sleep in on Saturdays and Big Evan has to get up with the children. I squatted beside her lounge chair. That's evil. I'm a death witch. What did you expect? Rainbow-colored baby bunnies and lollipops? Molly spluttered with laughter. People who dye baby bunnies should be shot. I'll tweet that to my congressman for inclusion in next year's bills. Has Greg Gua been to see her? Yes. He condemned her to death by facing the sun. He'll have her chained in silver at sunrise. She hesitated. Are you sure? Burning to death? Witches were burned at the stake. I've read the accounts, family accounts, firsthand. Her voice trailed away. I touched her shoulder, not knowing how to comfort her. She killed Brenda Resk. She used magic in a dominance duel during the Sangre Duello. She was a traitor. But I'm not sure of anything. Not anymore. Except that we love each other? I nodded slowly, feeling all the tension slide from my shoulders, down my spine, out my feet, and into the sand beneath me. Except that. And that fangheads are evil no matter whose side they're on. True. She tilted her head at me, her red curls flying in the wind off the gulf. I know you stayed in New Orleans to keep us safe. The tension shot back into me. Moll held out her little finger. Friends forever. Pinky swear. I hooked my little finger into hers. Best friends forever. Moll pulled her finger from mine and her hand under the blankets. Quit worrying about me, big cat. I'm warm and safe. Even though Tidus did something with magic when he crossed over the hedge and onto the property, I just remembered. Molly frowned. She hadn't noticed that. Crap. Even though Dominique is wearing a ruby exactly like one I own, I asked. And hers might be full of dark magic? Even that. Do you want the evil ruby? At my expression, she said, sorry, the ruby isn't technically evil. It doesn't contain a curse, and the working in it was used up and can't be renewed. I didn't tell her that I had absorbed the working. I trusted Molly completely, but maybe not about Dark Queen magics and what my five-pointed star magics could do. It won't hurt you, she said. I can freeze her for 30 seconds and open a passageway into the hedge. I watched Dominique from my vantage point, crouching on the sand. I said, if you can do that, sure. Molly squirmed higher on her lounge chair and pulled a hand from the covers. You'll have 30 seconds. Louder, she called. Lakish? Jane wants something on Dominique. The older woman appeared from the darkness, looking grumpy. Of course she does. Jane always wants something. It felt like being slapped in the face. Have I done something wrong? I asked. No, Lakish said. But her tone said otherwise. Molly said, Lakish, Jane's trying to save us. We could just incinerate the entire house and be done with it. It might be worth the punishment. Or Molly could just use her death magics and drain the life and undeath of everyone here. The words and the thoughts sent a cold shock through me. I looked at the house. The most powerful vamps in the world were all in one place. You do that, I said, my voice reasonable, unemotional, a false calm. And there will be a power struggle in the vampire world like nothing we've ever seen on the face of the earth. Lakish blew out a breath and turned her creole dark eyes to me. Think I don't know that? Leo is the lesser of two evils. If Leo loses and Tidus wins, all bets are off. I looked at Molly, a death witch. Draining the vamps to death would kill her baby and probably drive her insane and expose what she was to the entire world. But Molly could do it. It was likely that the coven leader of Nola could do that same thing in a different way. This was why the witches were really here, and I didn't know whether to be happy at the extra layer of protection for the U.S. humans, or terrified. Lakish stood next to Molly's chair. They both pointed the fingers of their right hands to the hedge, and Lakish said, "Dominique, Confuto, Hedge, Concesso." Dominique went utterly still, her mouth open and her face frozen in a mask of vamped-out fury. The hedge of thorns appeared as a thin, uneven film of light, like a layer of plastic.
"Resigno,"
Lakish said. A small thin opening appeared from the top of the hedge to the ground. "Go." I raced to the spell of confining, studying it as I moved, mentally counting off the 30 seconds. I stopped in front of the hedge and examined the gem. There was no active reason to take it, but my gut, the magic's coursing through my middle, said it was mine. I reached into the hedge's opening and grabbed the moonstone necklace, gave it a strong yank, and the clasp broke. I slid it from Dominique's neck, stepped back, the magical gem dangling, and caught a vision of an emblem embroidered into Dominique's undershirt. A lizard eating its tail. Jack Chaffreux's emblem. I looked around, hoping to see something that might be the anomaly that was Sim's magic. There was nothing. Moments later, the hedge of thorns snapped shut. Its energies began to move again, visible in beast sight, and Dominique started raving. She saw what I had in my hands and fell utterly still for a moment. Then she threw her entire body at the hedge, again and again. Not that it did her any good. I examined the necklace, its central gem and its energies. The ruby's magic had changed in the scant moments I'd held it. Instead of zipping all over the place in vaguely round patterns, as they had when resting against Dominique's undead flesh, the energies had begun to angle in and out. They formed a star pattern, like the pentagram of my energies. The ruby seemed to have the ability to evolve to suit the person who held it or wore it against her skin. It was a battery for power. Beast thought at me, "Like meat. Dangerous prey meat. Eat meat of stone. Beast can be big. Best ambush hunter." It was a boost to exist in magic, and it made me feel pretty good. Calmer. Stronger. Which meant there would surely be a backlash at some point. That other shoe dropping. Because nothing in magic is without cost. It might also be a mood booster. Because I felt more hopeful than I had only a moment past, the weight on my shoulders still heavy but not full of terror. Feeling better, even though nothing in my life was really improved, I went back to Molly's chair and knelt on one knee on the sand. Lakish had already moved away, into the dark again. I kissed her cheek and said, "I love you, Molly Megan Everhart Trueblood. I love you too, Jane Doe Yellowrock. Now, go kill bad things." She shooed me away. "Yes, ma'am." Standing, I walked toward the house, shoving aside the small, niggling thought that Molly could be passively drinking down all the death on Spitfire Island, just like a moon witch in full moonlight absorbing lunar magic power. Could be growing stronger and more deadly death by death. No, not Molly. Not pregnant with a witch child that might die from the death. Enough of this crap. I can't suspect everyone I love. I strode back to the beach mansion and into my shared room. I knelt, pulled my luggage out from under the bunk bed, and rattled around in the bags and suitcases until I found the box of magical trinkets. I left a mess of unfolded clothes, dirty clothes, and toiletries on the floor, and I didn't care. The ruby was in the box, and I lifted it out, a smoothed crystal of stone, smaller than my distant memory, smaller than the ruby that Dominique had worn. This stone was zipping with scarlet motes of magic power too, racing in a round pattern. I yanked the clasp off the new ruby and let the moonstones clatter from the wire into the bottom of the box, catching the ruby in my other palm. I scrounged around some more and found the necklace I had bought when I first came to New Orleans, one I had worn dancing, and bent the focal stone free from its wire wrapping. Pressed the wires around the rubies to hold them in place on the chain so they were encased together. I hooked it around my neck, centered them close to the gold nugget I always wore, and made sure it could all be seen easily. I made my way to the third floor, straightening my back, firming my face and my steps. I was partway up when I heard Sabina speak.
Emperor Vespianus's weapons master, Salvatrice Bianchi, challenges Pelissier's Adelaide Mooney to a death match, are both present.
I raced the rest of the way to the third floor. Sal and Dell stepped forward. Sal was a behemoth of a woman, broad and tall and muscular, her 2 feet of hair braided into a long column and wrapped in leather at her back, the hair sheath reminiscent of a binding on a horse's tail. Her fighting leathers were old and scored and torn. Dell was dressed in golden leathers smeared with the blood of previous opponents, matches I hadn't witnessed. I'd seen Dell in a skirmish and sparring, but never in combat. The bell chimed. My heart lurched. Dell dashed forward, her sword circling, cut, 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 cut. Blood flowed, steel clashed. Dell's opponent dropped to one knee, bleeding from 2 head wounds, a hank of scalp and hair on the floor. I started to shout encouragement, but Salvatrice dropped her left sword. Before it landed, she pulled a small blade, stabbed up, into Dell's body, catching her at the unprotected spot where thigh armor met abdominal armor plate. Sal's sword clanged to the floor. Dell made a small sound of surprise, like, oh. She stumbled. Salvatrice rose to her feet, stepping closer to Dell, drawing the blade up Dell's side, along the protective plate, through her body. Scarlet pumped over Salvatrice's hand to her elbow, splattered hard on the wood outside of the octagonal. Salvatrice twisted the blade to the side and across, a move that cut through bowel, kidneys, liver, and descending aorta. I could hear the sound of things inside of Dell tearing, separating. Oh, she said again. Dell fell, her knees and hips going limp. She landed on the wood floor, Salvatrice fallen with her, in a languid motion, removing the blade with an upward twist. Sal stood, her blade dripping. Brian said,
"Results of this duel are acceptable to the Honorios."
How could they be acceptable? "This round to Titus Flavius Vespianus," Sabina said, as if unperturbed at the death. "Has Leos Primo signed papers to be turned?"
Dacey raced forward, her face blanched whiter than the moon through the windows.
"I will not lose my daughter. I decide for her."
Dacey dropped to the floor, an ungainly motion for a vamp, and ripped her own lower arms lengthwise to increase bleeding. Placed one wrist to her daughter's mouth, the other deep inside Dell's body. But Dell didn't drink, didn't swallow. After 2 long minutes, Dacey rose to her feet and turned her back on Dell, bloody tears streaking her face. She said,
"Take Adelaide to my bed."
And the heir of Clan Shattuck walked down the stairs as her people rushed to wrap Dell's body in bloody sheets and carry her down. I was certain I wasn't breathing, certain that my heart wasn't beating. Dell was my friend, had been my friend. Dell was dead. Or could Leo's healing blood potion save her? How good was it? Sabina said,
"Aloysio Esposito, tercero of the Europeans, has challenged Pelissier's secondo heir, Gregoire. The bout will begin in 5 minutes. To allow time for blood removal. This will be the last bout of night one of the Sangre Duello."
I knew about Aloysio. This was going to be bad. I slid unnoticed into the shadow of one of the wood beam roof supports. I reached up and gripped the two rubies and the gold nugget together. My other hand went into a pocket to grip the glob, though I didn't remember putting it away. I prayed a wordless prayer, begging. Did God really hear the ones who fell away? I'd personally fouled a baptismal pool full of holy water. Would he hear the prayer of someone with so much blood on her hands? Surely it was God that had sent Hayel to me. Unless the angel was hanging around my life to exact heavenly justice on me at some predetermined point. I didn't know, and I feared that my faith had grown thin and worn and was full of holes. We stood on the sand. Aloysio Esposito, Tercero Titus, or as some vamps called it, Troisième, was third in line to the crown of the Europeans, the current master of the cities of Madrid, Barcelona, Lisbon, Marrakesh, Casablanca, and the Balearic Islands, basically Spain, Portugal, and Morocco. He'd been fighting for centuries, had a head count of more than 1,000 names, humans and vamps, and he was nearly as old as his emperor. Aloysio was not a pretty vamp. His face was scarred by pre-turning sword cuts, and his back was rumored to be marked by the scars of whiplashings. But he had vibrant, caramel-colored eyes, and he was tall and slender as a reed, with well-defined shoulders and a tapering back. He walked like a racehorse, with a long, rangy stride and a slight bounce in his step. Aloysio Esposito had not lost a first blood bout in centuries. He hadn't lost a death match in, well, ever. Sabina did not announce anything or ask about weapons. She said nothing as they approached the central octagonal. Gray Gua and Aloysio were both wearing black, their matte fighting leathers new and well-armored. The death bell rang. The note pure and clean and deadly. The attacks were so fast I could hardly see the movement of the blades, glistening in the dim glow of the lights mounted above us. They clanged, clanked, shushed, as blade slid upon blade. Blood flew in scarlet drops. Gregoire's hair was stained scarlet. Aloysio's neck was bleeding. Just above it, his earlobe was nicked and missing a wedge. Step, step, step. Feet silent in this dance of death. Weapons a blur. I wasn't breathing. The glob flashed with a blistering heat. In the same instant, there was movement in my peripheral vision, flashing. I dropped. The blade thunked into the pillar above me, right where my eyes had been. Perched on my toes, I whirled. No one was there. Looked back to the duel. It was even bloodier. Splatters flying in the air, splatters on the sand. One landed on my face, cold vamp blood. I grunted, my eyes still whipping around the space, away from the duel, which was in its 7th second, searching for anyone who looked wrong, who wasn't watching the fight with enough attention, or with too much attention. No one looked out of place or guilty. My eyes slid to the side, refusing to focus, and I realized someone was beneath an obfuscation spell. Bansom Mlerae. I pulled on Beast's side in the rubies, heated in my hand. I saw the form of a woman on the far side of the sand, hidden beneath the witch working. Now that I knew where to look, she was slender and muscular. Arms akimbo, swords at her sides. I let go of the rubies and she vanished from sight. Had Dominique been using the ruby to keep track of Sim? Yeah, made sense. Fast thoughts. Fast as the blades. I glanced at the duel. 11 seconds. Our witches were farther back on the sand, not close enough to help. This one had gotten inside the hedge of thorns. Had to be in the moments when the hedge was dropped so we could come and go. She had walked over the outline of the hedge of thorns without Molly seeing her, which meant she had come in with Titus, her witch energies absorbed among the vamps.
A thump sounded. My eyes flew to the battle. Gray Gua was on his back. Aloysio stood over him. My heart fell through the sand beneath me.
Chapter 19. It's Poisoned.
Gray Gua rolled away, swift as thought. Aloysio bent over. His guts spilled out onto the floor in a bloody, reeking, gag-worthy slither. Black and scarlet, like eels in raw meat. Aloysio dropped to his knees. Gray Gua rose and whipped his sword in an arc. Aloysio's head rolled to the side. Gray Gua bowed to Sabina. He was a bloody mess but still standing, his enemy's intestines in a coil around his ankles.
Golden,
the camera wolf muttered.
Results of this duel are acceptable to the Honorios, Brandon said, his voice emotionless.
But I could see the strain on his face. He had sworn to Gray Gua. The twins loved Blondie. This had been the hardest one he had watched, knowing that if his master died, he could not avenge the true death. I stood and pulled the knife from the wooden support. It was the length of my hand and fingers from tip of blade to tip of hilt. It was old and not well cared for, dried blood in the crevices. I sniffed it and caught the stench of humans and vamps and magic. Death spells in it? I looked around but couldn't spot the witch anywhere. I re-gripped the rubies. Nothing. She had moved. Sabina clapped her hands three times and said,
"The Sangre Duello will recommence 1 hour after dusk. For now, there are food and beverages here and below for the humans. The Mithrins who wish to sup before sleep or before departing must hurry. Dawn is nigh."
Gray Gua, stepping gracefully out of the intestines, walked off the octagonal and toward the stairs to the beach mansion. His footprints were bloody, and as he passed me, I realized I was smelling his blood. A lot of his blood. I swept an arm under his and supported him to Leo's room. The MOC followed me, and there was a lot of harried French, staccato orders, too fast for me to pick out words. I eased Gray Gua onto the bed, and Leo fell on his friend, tearing his own flesh to heal him. The bottle of healing blood potion was on the mattress beside Leo's knee. It was nearly empty. I had no idea if there was another bottle or not. Gray Gua met my eyes with his blue ones and said,
"My people have bound Dominique in silver and placed her on the sand for the dawn. You will not save her this death by taking her head."
"I won't save her." I moved away and went looking for the witch. I didn't find the witch, but I told Lakish what I had seen, and she was searching the house and grounds with a version of a find-it spell. Molly was in bed, grumpy but resting, only because I picked her up and carried her inside to bed and set a guard over her. She could get up to pee. She could have food and fluids delivered. That was it. Dawn was breaking and the screams of Dominique could be heard across the island, and far out to sea, probably. I'd never heard such horrible screams. But I didn't go look. And I didn't shut my ears to the sounds of the wails. I found the courage to check on our own dead and wounded. Dale was on Daisy's bed, with her mother, one of the Robert Honorios, and three humans, her naked body cradled against Sabina, the out-clan priestess doing some witchy, shamanistic thing over her that looked vaguely familiar and totally scary. Sabina's eyes were closed and she was speaking in a language I didn't recognize. Dell wasn't undead. She wasn't alive either, not breathing, no heartbeat. Her body gray and mottled all over, rigor mortis setting in. Her fingernails and toenails were perfect, a blaze of scarlet. All I could think was that she had gone for a mani-pedi without me.
and that thought brought tears to my eyes. I pulled off the chain with the two rubies and carried them to Sabina, holding them out, saying nothing. The gems dangling, twirling. They were batteries. Maybe they'd help Del. The twirling slowed, stopped. Without opening her eyes, Sabina reached